Hey everybody, and welcome back. It's been a while since I put out a video. So over the past, I'd say month or so, I've been trying to kind of take over one of the fundamentals courses at our gym. The instructor there now is a purple belt, almost a brown, I think. I think he's like a 3 or 4 stripe purple belt. He's really good. But he's going back to school for cybersecurity, and I had been doing I'd asked about coaching sometime last year, and I finally got started doing orientations in November, right, of 2021. So I've been doing them for 6 months, and now I'm kind of starting to learn how to take over the fundamentals courses. Man, it's a big adjustment, right? You got to prepare for the classes and make sure that you're well studied and have things, and make sure that you're laying it out in a way that makes sense. And if somebody's brand new that day, you got to remember they might have a background, but what I've really noticed is that I really take for granted what people know. I assume that people know what closed guard is or open guard. People don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Some of them might, if they have a background and they watch a lot of it, maybe UFC, but you would be very, if you're a UFC fan, I'm guessing you're watching this, right? You're a fan of MMA. You would be surprised at how many people participate in MMA and come in and do the fundamentals program that are not interested in mixed martial arts. Or they have a very they know that it's there, but they don't understand the concepts, right? They don't really understand them in depth, right? They're talking about they just know that it's fighting, and they're not really I always just when I got into jiu-jitsu, I got into it because of the UFC, right? I got into it because I was watching it and I was this is fucking crazy. And then you find jiu-jitsu and it's kind of this way to grapple and learn something that's actually incredibly challenging, right? And physically intensive, it's competitive, but you don't have to get hit in the fucking face. You know what I mean? I love watching it, but for me, it's just not for me. I would love to practice my Muay Thai and stuff a little bit more and get in and start learning shit, but I don't want to compete in that realm, you know. And I know jiu-jitsu can be dangerous as well and shit, but damn, I mean, I don't know. For me, I'd just rather not get hit in the face, and it gives you a good way to train and stay healthy and, you know, keep your fucking brain intact. You're not getting tagged in the head. I don't know. But anyway, I feel there's a couple, I'll put a timestamp here so you guys can skip ahead if you want, but there's a couple of weird dynamics, right, around learning how to teach and stuff, right? First off, I'm a 3-stripe blue belt. So I think that some of the kids in there, I keep calling them kids. They're not kids. They're grown adults, right? They look at you as especially if they're between 2 and 4 stripes, they look at themselves as kind of close to you in rank, I think. I know that I'm 3 stripes, but they, I think when you're a purple belt, that's kind of where the standard is, right? But I've been training for about 6 years. I got started back in actually March of 2016. So yeah, just over 6 years now. And granted, inconsistently, right? Showing up sometimes, not all the time, but you know what I mean? I was first off, I trained for 2 or 3 months at Clarion MMA, which is where I went to college, Clarion University, right? I trained there for a little bit. And then I went to San Francisco for a summer internship. So I spent 3 months at Half Gracie. But I'm talking about I'm going to jiu-jitsu maybe twice a week, 3 times a week might be a good week. And I'm probably missing total weeks. You know what I mean? Inconsistent, consistently inconsistent, right? In San Francisco, that picked up a little bit more. I started going because I was paying so much for the membership that I wanted to get the most out of it. I mean, I went from paying $50 a month in Clarion to paying $180 in San Francisco, and it was outrageous to me. But I was making sure that I showed up 3 days a week, and the warm up there was fucking hell. I know I'm going on a tangent, guys, but they would put you through the fucking paces, man. You would go through they called it a warm up, but you would be doing fireman carries and shit like that, and all these push-ups and stuff, and people just be hammering them out these fucking animals. And I'm I'm not in shape like this. I'm doing 3 push-ups and everybody around me already hammered out 10 and they're up and running around the circle again. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? And then, so it's like a 30 to 45 minute warm-up. Then you learn the technique for like, I think it's like a 30 minute warm-up, and then it was a 30 minute technique session, and they drilled hard, right? So you're drilling hard through that and you're exhausted from the warm-up that you just went through. And then they did 6 minute rounds. So it was a very intense gym, and it was run by like Kurt Osiander at the time. I think there's been, I don't really follow up, but I think there's some like drama at that gym now, but, and it split off or something. But anyway, that was a very cool experience, right? After that, I went back to Clarium for a little bit, probably for like 6 months. Kind of the same deal. I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 times a week whenever I could. I don't know, maybe going through spurts where I showed up a little more. And then I got a job in Richmond, Virginia, and I moved down there. And I'm really going off the rails here, guys, but like just to tell my story. So the guy at Clarion who ran the gym, his name was Leo LeFay, recommended that I go train. And they were a Jean-Jacques Machado affiliate, by the way, right? And then recently moved under Robert Drysdale, so they're Zenith now. But he recommended Revolution BJJ there. And I went in. And I'll never forget, I did my orientation or whatever. Like, he brought me in, showed me around, showed me some of the stuff. I did my orientation with Daniel, who was a black belt there. And I thought that I was, like, on the verge of getting my blue belt, right? Like, they were talking about, like, the belt testing and the things that you had to be able to do in order to get it from Drysdale, because they recently went under Drysdale, right? I think while I was away at San Francisco, Clarion went under Drysdale. And they were like showing me the stuff that they had, like a curriculum, and you did a belt test. Okay. So I thought I was on the verge of getting my blue belt, and I wasn't even ready for like my first stripe at Revolution. Like when I got there, I was going to the classes and getting not just beat, like, but humiliated by 1 and 2 stripe white belts. It was fucking ridiculous. And like, I've never been to a gym, including my current one now, where they had one of the strictest belt promotions. Like I said, I'd been to San Francisco, trained at Clarion, now this place, and now out here at Easton. And this place in Richmond, Revolution BJJ, probably had the strictest belt like promotion curriculum I've ever seen. Like, it really took a lot to get each of your stripes. I trained there for 2 years. Once again, like, consistently inconsistent, maybe showing up more some weeks, never really any ambitions of competing or anything, just going, trying to practice stuff. Like, I don't know, you know. But I was there for 2 years and I got 2 stripes. So I came out here and, like, not always, but like sometimes I'd be like catching blue belts and shit, you know what I mean? Because I was so like, you're so well prepared to transition. Like, if you got your 2 stripes out there, like when I came out to my current gym, it was like, I think they just advanced a little bit quicker. I'm not saying either one is right or wrong. I'm just saying Revolution was very strict. So I spent a lot of time at white belt. I got promoted in 2020 to blue belt, and just now I'm at 3 stripes. So, I mean, I've advanced more quickly through my blue belt. Like, if you, I should, maybe I'll post like a picture or something of it on here, but like my white belt is all tattered up and my blue belt already has 3 stripes and it's like intact. And I've been a blue belt for almost like 2 years, but I was a white belt for like almost 4. So about 4 years. Yeah. It was like 4 or 4.5 years. So I spent a lot of time there. You know what I mean? So that, but that dynamic of teaching, I just feel like it's there and the students are like, it's present. So that's been weird to deal with. And then just a whole bunch of other dynamics. But, anyway, just like preparing for that and like having to get ready and stuff. I've been busy and trying to figure out like a rhythm and stuff. And I'm already like inconsistent with making these anyway, right? So just trying to get into a flow with all this shit. But anyway, let's move on to breaking down this UFC 273 main card. And there are a bunch of like huge favorites on this card and huge underdogs. And they're mainly in the top 3 fights, right? Like, Gilbert Burns is a massive underdog. Aljamain Sterling is a massive underdog. and the Korean Zombie is a massive underdog. I think I saw, I might be getting it mixed up, but like either way, it's like Burns is like either plus 360 or plus 350. And then the Zombie is like plus 500. And Aljamain Sterling is either plus 350 or plus 360. I can't remember which one. But like either way, you could bet $100 on each of those fights. And if just one of them wins, one of those underdogs win, you're going to profit $50 at the least, right? At the yeah. So it's like, I just feel like they're favorites and they deserve to be favorites. But I think the odds that one of those underdogs wins is actually pretty good. I don't know. Maybe not, but like there's some dynamics in each of those fights that make me think like, I could see it happening, even if I don't think it's likely. Like I said, I think they're favorites for a reason. And we'll talk about like which one I think is the most egregious when we get into the breakdown. But man, I just think some of them are overpriced. But anyway, we're going to start off talking about Mark. And also, speaking of odds, this is one that like personally, please don't start taking my betting advice, guys. I lose money all the fucking time. Like, but like, this is one of those lines that when I look at the fight between Vince Pichel and Mark Madsen, and I see that Mark Madsen is a plus 105 underdog, I'm hopping all over that, man. The guy won a silver in the 2016 Olympic Games in Greco-Roman wrestling. And they also have a common opponent in Austin Hubbard that you can look at, right? And here's my problem with Vince Pichel. And I know that he's tough as fuck. And I know that he's strong. And I know that he's going to be difficult for anyone, including Mark Madsen, to deal with. He's going to give him problems, I think. He's going to introduce things to him. But guys, Vince Pichel has been taken down by Austin Hubbard, by Roosevelt Roberts, by Gregor Gillespie. Granted, Gregor Gillespie mauls a lot of people if he gets a hold of you. His wrestling's next level. But he was also taken down by Jim Miller. Granted, he's good at like, he'll reverse positions and stuff. He reversed positions against Hubbard, right? After Hubbard got the takedown and he was able to do it against Miller and like get on top. I don't think he's going to be able to do that against Madsen. And I think that this is actually like one where the odds should be swung way in favor of Mark Madsen. Because if you also look, Austin Hubbard is able to back up Vince Pichel, right? And like, I know that MMA math doesn't always work, but I think that like Vince Pichel has a chance if he like makes this fight kind of dirty, right, and gritty, and he's able to reverse position up against the cage and the clinch and make it a fight like that where he's able to kind of get inside, you know, maybe chew up the legs from the outside. But overall, I just think that Mark Madsen's pressure is going to be there. I think he's going to force him backwards. And I think he's going to put it up against the cage and eventually Mark Madsen's going to get to where he needs. Like, if you just look at the way that Mark Madsen controlled Austin Hubbard, right? And then watch how Austin Hubbard out-wrestled Vince Pichel in a lot of the scrambles. I mean, like I said, Vince Pichel would reverse position and stuff like that. And, like, he would come out on top. But, like, Hubbard was able to get him down. My point is that if Madsen is able to get Vince Pichel down, and I do think that he's going to be able to, I think it's going to be very difficult for Pichel to do the things that he needs to do technically against Madsen. I just think he'll always be a step ahead of him in the transitions and he'll kind of get stuck there and maybe get finished, man. I don't know if it's ground and pound or what, like, but maybe the striking department, there's some opportunities there, or if he can get on top of Madsen somehow in reverse. I think Madsen's going to shut those reversals down because I think the technique gap when they get there is just going to be so large. I think there'll be moments where you're kind of like, oh, he might. And I think Madsen will just, for the most part, come out on top in the scrambles and stuff they get into. I just think there's going to be a level. There's like a level, right? And I think that it will inevitably like result in Vince Pichel getting taken down. Like I said, he gets taken down in a lot of his fights. The question is whether he's able to like make it difficult for the person and then kind of like start implementing his own offense where he starts taking them down, right? Like he did that against Roosevelt Roberts. He did it against Jim Miller. But my point is that like, I think once Mark Madsen is able to get it to the ground, I just think there's going to be a technical gap there, right? Like I said, I think the way for Vince Pichel is he has to be defending very well up against the cage on the takedown attempts and stuff. And he has to be like immediately trying to get back to his feet. The thing that he might be able to expose is like maybe maybe Madsen's not able to keep him down, which could be a big deal, right? Because that could become work for Madsen. It could make it tough for him. But I don't know. Just based on what I've seen, I think that Madsen has a pretty good shot to win this one. Next is the bout between Mackenzie Dern and Tisha Torres. And this fight's interesting because I feel like Tisha Torres, it just depends on which version of her shows up. If she throws up and she's throwing hands and she's like, you know, living up to her nickname, Tiny Tornado, and she's like letting it fly, she's hard to deal with, man, because she's constantly keeping stuff in your face. It's just kind of a question of whether she lets it go. Also, another thing is like her takedown defense in particular up against the cage is pretty good. Like if you look at moments where she got taken down against Angela Hill, it was usually because Angela would like catch something in the center of the octagon, like a kick, and then, you know, maybe throw right and force takedowns that way, right? But when people have to work for takedowns against her up against the cage and you're trying to get her from there, she makes it difficult. And even when you start like getting her to the ground, she does a very good job of posting out and building her base back up and just like then getting her back off the cage and then getting hands in your face again, right? And initially, I was looking at this and I was like, I think Mackenzie Dern is just going to be able to get her to the ground. But then I thought about it, and jiu-jitsu people, and Mackenzie Dern is no exception, they can struggle with the takedowns a little bit, right? Like you'll see it with Gilbert Burns. Like they can get them. I'm not saying they can't. Like Gilbert Burns got his against Wonderboy when he needed him and stuff, right? But like they don't come as effortlessly as they do for somebody like Habib or somebody who has a real, like, or like a GSP when he was in his prime, like somebody with a really strong wrestling base, right? And you see that like when Mackenzie hits her single legs and stuff, she just like there's little things that like she's not able to complete them all the time, right? So, and oftentimes when she's attempting her single legs, it's happening up against the cage. Mackenzie's willing to take these like chances and throw these big flurries to get inside, but her ultimate objective is to pin you up against the cage. And I like Tisha's defense from there. And that's what like kind of makes this interesting. I don't think that Mackenzie is going to be sitting out in the center of the octagon catching her kicks and stuff. I think she's going to be at a disadvantage in the striking and probably too confused to keep up. And maybe a little bit of a speed disadvantage too. Tisha's going to be fast. I think she'll be snapping stuff in there. Like I said, like I've kind of thought initially that maybe I think I'm going with Tisha Torres in this fight. I think that Mackenzie Dern, if she gets it to the ground and she's able to complete the takedown, if she can get the hands moving up, get in on a good shot and dump her down, right? Maybe she does work up. I don't know, but it's going to have to be like, she's going to have to put on some good wrestling, and I think that the takedowns that she hits are probably going to have to come in the center of the cage. I think if Tisha gets her back up against the cage, she'll make it difficult, and it'll also like extend the fight and make the, like I said, the takedowns will be harder and harder for Mackenzie to get, and it'll tire her out, and then Tisha will pick up the pace as the fight goes on. That's kind of how I see it playing out. If Mackenzie gets it to the ground, I can see her finishing her, though. I think she'll have what it takes to get Tisha out of there if she gets. I just think there'll be, again, kind of like we were talking about in the first fight, but from a jiu-jitsu level, like if Mackenzie's down there with her, I just think there's going to be a technical gap. I think on the feet, like I said, Tisha has a very good chance, but I think Mackenzie's, if it goes down, I could see Mackenzie finishing her relatively quickly. But I got Tisha Torres in this one. I think she's going to have what it takes to keep this fight from going to the ground. Maybe you see her go down a couple of times. As long as she's not in too compromised of a position and can work her way back up quickly, I think you're okay. I think if you see her get her guard passed, ooh, now we're in real danger, right? Like, and it depends on how quickly Mackenzie, I don't know. I just see Mackenzie kind of like slicing through her guard, and if she gets the takedown and ending up in a position where she'll be able to submit her. So I don't know. It depends. A lot of variables, but I kind of think that Tisha edges this one out just by keeping hands in her face, hitting her with stuff, getting out of the way. She'll hit you spinning back. She throws Superman punches and shit. She's like, if she lets it go, and I don't want to say like disrespects, but like doesn't give too much respect to the takedown like ability of, you know, like as long as she's not like backing up and respecting the takedown too much, because she doesn't want to strike to like overextend so she doesn't get shot on, right? You know what I'm saying? Like as long as she's respecting it, like a level amount, as long as she's not over respecting it. Cause like, I would be like, I don't think her takedowns are that strong. Keep hands in her face. Take a chance on defending someone, letting her shoot, tire herself out if you defend.
I don't know.
I think teacher's going to win. But anyway, let's move on to the bout that everybody's excited about. And this is the 170-pound matchup between Khamzat Chimaev, who is undefeated right now. And not only is he undefeated, he's absorbed like one significant strike in his UFC career. He's ranked 11, and he's taking on number 2, Gilbert Burns. And I think right now Hamzat's like a minus 480 or some shit like that. But I think that Gilbert Burns is either a plus 360 or a plus 350 underdog, which is insane to think about because you got to remember, man, Gilbert Burns is legit. And I know he has some losses on his record, but like he beat Wonder Boy. He hurt Kamaru Usman, right? Gilbert Burns in their title fight, like had Usman hurt pretty bad. Gilbert Burns is a bad motherfucker. Fuck Tyron. I mean, like granted Tyron Woodley was, you know, going through the whole like skid and everything, but Gilbert Burns is really good and he has world-class jiu-jitsu and he's fought in big spots before. I don't think the pressure is really going to be a problem for Hamza. I think he's just going to show up and fight how he fights. The question is, at some point in your career, I think, like they're... Khabib is like kind of the one exception. Like you can think about some times where he's been cracked with stuff like by Michael Johnson. Poirier hit him with some good stuff. Justin did, but nothing where Michael Johnson probably cracked him the hardest where I was like, oh, he's wobbled. Like he's really hurt here. Like I felt like if Johnson could have hit him a few more times, he had a chance, but he just couldn't, man. You know, but that's probably the most hurt I think I've ever seen Khabib. But really never lost a round, you know? Maybe Gleison Tebow is there is an argument there that Gleison Tebow actually won the fight against Khabib. I don't know. But, you know, the point is just like, I don't know. Is Khamzat going to be – is the leap in competition just – Khabib also had a lot of UFC fights leading up to – where he started really fighting the top tier of the lightweight division. Whereas, and same with Islam Makhachev a little bit, and it was like a slow progression. So you slowly see them like developing their skills and like apply. So I don't know. If Khabib had ascended up to fight the number 2 guy in his division at the time, would he have won? I don't know. But there's all this hype around Khamzat Chimaev because of what he's been doing. But this is a massive leap in competition. Gilbert Burns is very fucking legit, and he has serious power in his hands. I do think that like Khamzat, in my opinion, deserves to be the favorite a little bit, just because I think stylistically it's a favorable matchup for him. Like I don't know. The question is just like, is it too much too soon? Because like I think Gilbert Burns is going to present Khamzat with some adversity at some point in the fight, right? Like I really think so. I think that like Gilbert Burns is going to show him some problems. And the question is going to be, how does Khamzat deal with the adversity? If he just goes out there and blows through Gilbert Burns, I mean, fuck, what do you do? He's got to fight Colby or Usman next, right? He has to. That's got to be the next fight for him. But I think that Burns will give him a little bit of trouble, but I do think that he'll edge out a decision. Like he'll just edge out a dominant decision. I don't think he'll be able to submit Gilbert Burns. I think Gilbert Burns, the trouble might come for him in the ground and pound department when he gets taken down, right? And having to repeatedly defend the takedowns. The question is going to be, and I know everybody talks about his gas tank and stuff, but like, let's see it against somebody with like high level technique. You know, he's executing this stuff against guys who he's had massive mismatches against, and Gilbert's going to be good off his back. He's going to have a firm understanding of how to stay out of trouble and stuff. And what happens is the fight starts to extend a little bit, you know? Maybe Gilbert spends a round and a half on his back and then works his way back up because, you know, he's, I don't know. What's it look like when Khamzat is in a position where somebody is really good at defending the stuff and has a firm understanding of what's happening on the ground and he's not able to whiz, like, zip through the guard the way he did, like, Li Jingliang and get to his back and tap him out? I don't think he's going to be able to do that to Gilbert Burns when it gets to the ground. And the question is going to be, I think he'll be able to take Gilbert Burns down. I just don't think he'll be able to like slice through him and submit him that way. I think he's going to have to do a lot of ground and pound, and I think it's going to be a lot of work for him. The question is going to be, how does Khamzat start looking in the second and third round when he's doing work against somebody with high-level technique, is my question. You know what I'm saying? He's been doing it with people who have good technique but not great technique. Gilbert Burns is going to have great defensive technique. And how does Khamzat look regardless of how great you hear his cardio is, blah, blah, blah. How's it look if he starts hitting brick walls against somebody who has good defensive strategies from the bottom? Does he tire himself? I don't know. I don't know. We're going to find out. That technique, like, and Gilbert Burns is strong too. He ain't no pussy. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, I don't think he's going to toss Burns around like that. Burns is, you know, I don't know. We're going to see. This is a great fucking fight. But if I'm betting money, you got to bet it on Burns just because he's such a big dog and I think he's being disrespected. I think that, if I'm being honest, I do think that Khamzat is just going to grind out a decision win. I don't necessarily think, I think he could, I also think that, like, both guys have potential to finish it on the feet. I do in this, like, I think Khamzat's going to win, guys. But just in terms of, like, looking at the odds, I think that Gilbert Burns has a decent chance to win. Like, I wouldn't be completely shocked if Gilbert Burns won the fight. That's why I think the value in the bet is there, right? Like, and also, don't take advice from me. I lose money betting on the fights all the time. But anyway, I just feel like it's, like, overpumped a little bit. And, like, we don't know yet. We've seen it. We've seen him do great stuff. I do think that Khamzat comes down the pipe a little bit straighter with his punches and Burns comes out wider. But, like, Usman's pretty much like, Usman will overextend on stuff if he starts like missing and shit. But like for the most part, Usman's straight down the pipe too. And if Burns finds home, man, he's going to hurt you. You know what I mean? I don't care who you are. If he starts cracking you with stuff, I think it'll like, Khamzat will be surprised by his power. So we're going to see. It's a great fucking fight. If I'm betting I put it on Burns, I think Khamzat grinds out a decision win, but I'm not going to be surprised if Burns wins. I don't know how. I don't know. I don't know how it could happen. I could see both of them hurting each other on the feet. Like I said, I could see both of them finishing it from there. But shit, I don't know. Gonna be crazy. I'm excited. Going with Khamzat, putting money on Burns just because I think there's a little value there. Anyway, moving on. Let's talk about the fight between Aljamain Sterling and Petr Yan. So I think this is one of those fights that, yes, Petr Yan was beating Aljamain Sterling up. I think he was on his way to winning that fight. I think he really picked stuff up in the third, fourth, and fifth round. And I think that like people are forgetting that it was kind of close. Like Aljamain won the first, arguably the second round. Like Aljamain was just like, I just feel like he, as the fight progressed, his style wore him out and he was like almost like fighting himself when he was throwing his shots and a lot of the pop was taken off of them. And that's when Yan really started getting the boxing working and right, started hitting all his trips and stuff and just kind of tossing Aljamain to his back, all that weird shit, right? Like Aljamain just kept ending up with his back on the mat over and over and then getting outboxed by Piotr as the fight progressed. But it's not as if Aljamain wasn't finding any success at all. People are acting like Aljamain isn't really fucking good. And he is, guys. Like, you don't do what he did to Corey Sandhagen without being really fucking good. You don't do what he did to a lot of guys in the division without being really fucking good. Aljamain is legit. And his jiu-jitsu is very good, right? Like, I don't think that Yan will want to engage him on the ground for very long. I think I want to kind of do the same thing, hit his takedowns and get out if he can. But, like, I also just think that Sterling is going to make a lot of adjustments for this fight, right? He's seen him once and the first fight was competitive. Again, I do think that Yan has the advantage. I just think that he's very patient. He waits, he gets his reads, he kind of takes his time, might sacrifice a round, like getting the read or something, like I said, like trying to figure out what you're doing. But once he gets going, he just slowly turns it on. And when he feels you like fading, he just pours on more and more and more and more and more, right? I mean, I don't know. I personally just feel like he has a really good chance to win this fight. If I had to take all of the, like, all the three fights, right? If I had to look at all of the odds and say, which one of these do you think is, like, the most egregious? I would probably say this one, right? I think this fight is a little bit more competitive than people remember. I want to see what Sterling looks like if he controls his movement a little bit more and he's not like so like moving around. It was like he was moving around like too much. Like, I don't know. There was like, he seemed a little bit like, I don't know, just off his game a little bit. to me, honestly. Like, if you watch a lot of Aljamain's fights, he always moves around a lot and shit, right? But there was just something in his movement, like a hitch to it or something. And, like, I don't know. And maybe that's because Jan's, like, I don't know. But I just feel like Aljamain is going to come a little bit better prepared for this one. And I think it's a closer fight than people think. Once again, I think Piotr Jan is going to win. I think as the fight starts to wear on, he'll keep putting the pressure on. He'll find openings. He'll outbox Aljamain. He'll probably hit his takedowns and stuff. He won't engage him on the ground. He'll hit takedowns against, like, in the center of the cage mainly, or out in the open. And Aljamain, maybe we'll see him work a little bit more heavily for takedowns up against the cage. Maybe we'll see him come out and play a little bit more kick heavy. I don't know. I don't know what we're going to – but I just think that it's an interesting matchup, and Aljamain's incredibly, like, disrespected in these odds. It's pretty insane. But anyway, moving on. So, again, guys, I'm taking Piotr Jan. I think he's going to win by – I could see him finishing Aljamain. Like, it's not – this is what I'm saying. It's not like I think that Piotr Jan doesn't deserve to be the favorite. It's just that he's that big of a favorite. Like I said, the fact that you can bet $100 on each of these three fights and come out on top 50 if just one of them wins, it's crazy. But anyway, I digress. Moving on. Korean Zombie versus Alexander Volkanovski. I think that Volkanovski is, like, starting to creep up on the 145 argument for the GOAT is interesting because it's changed hands so many times. It was Aldo, and then it was McGregor because of the tear he went on, right? Because he knocked out Aldo. And then Holloway kind of came in and beat Aldo up, took the belt from him, and then just kind of reigned there for a while before he eventually lost to Volkanovski. Volkanovski defends his title against Holloway in a rematch in a fight that I personally thought Holloway won. I thought Volkanovski won the first fight and Holloway won the second. And then he defends against Brian Ortega in a fucking amazing fight. And in a fight that we saw him deal with some serious adversity. We were talking earlier about how we just haven't seen Chimaev deal with adversity yet. Like, we have seen guy like Volkanovski, he's a polished champion, right? Like, he's dealt with adversity. He's beat Max Holloway twice, regardless of what I think. He's beat Max Holloway twice. He beat Brian Ortega. And Brian Ortega has a win over the Zombie, by the way, right? So I just feel like he's approaching that, like, GOAT status. Like, you got the Korean Zombie. I think people are going to want a third fight between Holloway and Volkanovski. I think that it's one of the most interesting fights in the division. They match up well together. And I don't know, man. I just feel like this is probably, in my opinion, the most deserving, like, odds. I think the Korean Zombie is incredibly talented. He's very good on the ground, right? Very well-rounded. The thing that makes him dangerous in this fight, in my opinion, is the fact that he can fucking crack. Like, if you look at what he did to Renato Moicano, he has power in his hands, and he's kind of sneaky with it, right? Like, he's, like, heavy on that lead leg. He's got that, like, slow kind of, like, lumbering pace, and then, boom, he cracks you with counters when you come in. He's got fast hands. And you see Volkanovski get cracked with stuff. It's not like I feel like the Zombie can't win. I just can't see him. If you look at the way that Volkanovski was able to defend on the ground against Holloway and Ortega in really compromising positions, like a deep mounted guillotine, a deep triangle. If you look at how he was able to defend against that, I don't think the Zombie is going to be able to finish him unless he hurts him really bad in a way similar to, like, how the Zombie did against Edgar. But I still think I can't see him finishing him on the ground. The way I see the Zombie winning is by kind of, like, cracking him with something. I think as this fight starts to wear on, you might see, like, a closer first round as Volkanovski. I think he's going to move around a lot, like, keep the jab out there, start with leg kicks, and start trying to draw those counters and that offense out of Zombie. So you might see Zombie, and those are honestly, like, while he's trying to, I think those are Zombie's best chances to kind of, like, really, because he'll, like, commit hard on stuff, and I think he covers more ground and with more speed than people expect, and boom, he cracks you with shit. You know what I mean? He sets stuff up well, and the Zombie's really good. I just think that as the fight starts to progress, Volkanovski, if he doesn't get cracked earlier on, the later this fight goes, the more it swings in favor of Volkanovski. I think Volkanovski, you might see him drop a round. you know, just trying to figure stuff out and make sure that he's not getting hit with those shots. But I don't think Volkanovski is going to be afraid to wrestle him, and I think he'll have a wrestling advantage here. Even though the zombie can wrestle, man. The zombie, the zombie's one of my favorite fighters to watch. He really is. He's very good. I just think Volkanovski is going to be a little bit ahead of him in every department. And back to what I was trying to get to, as the fight wears on, you're just going to start to see Volkanovski pull that offense and start getting his own offense going, right? Like, he'll pull the things that he needs out of the zombie, and then he'll get going. Whether it's first, he'll just, like, figure out what he needs to do through his footwork and stuff, right? Like, I think that at some point he's just going to have too many options available, too much going on with the footwork, too many traps being set, too much, like, pulling zombie in and out of things and then throwing different looks at him, hitting him with the leg kicks. I think he's just going to throw with a lot more volume, and it's going to lead to him being able to go first, and the counters of the zombie won't be such a big deal because Volk will be finding home, and I think that's kind of how it progresses until I think I can see Volkanovski getting a finish in this fight, and I can also just see him picking up like a really dominant decision win because the zombie's tough, man, like he is. But I could see Volkanovski hurting him on the feet. I could see him taking him down and working for ground and pound from there. I think Volkanovski is super legit, and I think that he wins this fight handily. If he doesn't get cracked with something like that he doesn't see coming by the zombie. But anyway, guys, I think that's it. We can go back through and recap real quick. In the first fight, I'm taking Mark Madsen over Vince Pichel. I think that Pichel's going to have to make things dirty, and he's probably going to get taken down, so it'll come down to whether he can reverse position against Madsen. I don't know that he'll be able to. Pichel might have a slight edge on the feet, but I see Madsen being able to pressure things back against the cage and get the takedown, just like most of Vince Pichel's opponents have been able to take him down. The question is whether can you keep him there, right? So I'm taking Mark Madsen in that one. I like the odds on that one too. Not to give out betting advice, please don't take it. But I do think they're favorable, honestly. The next fight between Mackenzie Dern and Tisha Torres, I'm actually going with Tisha Torres. I think if it goes to the ground, Mackenzie Dern could absolutely win. The question is just going to be, can she get it there? Can she do what she needs to do to like advance through the guard of Tisha before, and is Tisha able to work her way back up to the feet if she does get taken down? I think if it takes place in the center of the octagon, Tisha Torres has a really good chance to win because I just think she's going to outpoint Mackenzie. Burns versus Chimaev, I think Chimaev does win. Like I said, I could see either guy getting a finish on the feet and hurting each other. They both throw heavy. I think Khamzat deserves the favorite status in this, and I think he wins. I think he wins the decision, though. I think he still, at the end of the day, is going to lean on his wrestling, and Burns is going to present him with problems down there from his back. He's not going to be able to slice through like he does most people, right? Burns might be able to get back to his feet, too. I don't know. There's going to be a lot of questions that get answered in this fight for Khamzat Chimaev, but I do like him. I think he wins the decision. If I'm betting money, though, I'm betting on Burns. I think the value is just there. Same with all of these fights, except Zombie, maybe. I don't know. Watch me say that, and Zombie's the one to win, but like, I don't know. I think all of them have a little bit of value in betting a little something on him, if I'm being honest. But anyway, Aljamain Sterling versus Piotr Jan. Same thing. I'm going with Piotr Jan. I think he deserves to be the favorite, just a little bit too much, man. I think the boxing and the pressure will eventually get to Aljamain, but Aljamain can make things interesting if he's able to establish and hold his range and make it hard for Jan to get in, right? If he uses his kicks effectively and he's not getting tripped and stuff as he throws them, not letting fatigue or whatever it was in the last fight that set in kind of like hinder his technique, I think Aljamain presents a lot of problems for Piotr Jan, if I'm being honest. Aljamain's a little, man, I think Aljamain is probably like the most egregious underdog on this, like I said. And then finally, in our main event, I got Volkanovski over the Korean Zombie. I just think that he's going to be too technical over the course of a 25-minute fight for Zombie. And I just think he's going to have a slight edge in every department. So that's it, guys. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening to me ramble. And have a great weekend. Enjoy the fights. And I will catch you guys on the Aftermath show when we kind of recap all the shit that happened. You got Ian Garry fighting on the prelims and stuff too. Like, this is a good card, right? Like, this is an interesting card. So I'm excited for it, man. But I will catch you guys later. Thank you again. Bye-bye.